Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah, and welcome to this very special extra bonus culture episode of The Guilty Feminist. Well, I'm a feminist, but I do love a corset. The tighter, the better. Sometimes it's really fun if you can't breathe. I'm getting distracted, gang. I'm going down a cul-de-sac I shouldn't be going down. I mean a Regency corset, mostly. And today I am so excited to bring on the director of the brand new film, Mr. Malcolm's List, which Jessica Regan and I were lucky enough to see last night at the Curzon in Mayfair at a very special screening. It's based on the novel by Susanna Lane. And the cast, wait for it, there's a, like, do your own drum roll here. Frida Pinto, Chope DeRisu, Zoe Ashton, Oliver Jackson Cohen, Ashley Park and Theo James. It is an extraordinary cast. There are some fans, there are some bonnets, there are some carriages, there is a masquerade ball. It is everything guilty and everything feminist all wrapped up in one. It is released in the UK on Friday, the 26th of August. What? That's today. You could get a ticket to go and see this tonight. If not, you must try and see it this weekend because opening weekends really do help. And this is a female-driven film. It's female-produced, it's female-written, it's female-directed. Mr. Malcolm's List is a Regency comedy about a gentleman of means who is looking for a bride and makes a list of requirements that he wants to tick off to make sure that he is getting the right wife. And this, understandably, incenses some women around him. Here's a trailer.
Miss Dalton, it is common knowledge
you have been cast into this world without fortune or prospects.
It is my desire to have you as my wife.
I am greatly honored by your offer, but I cannot accept.
This offer will not be extended a second time.
Third, actually.
Out of my way, idiot geese!
My dear.
Dearest Selina,
will you come visit me in London? I promise you will be well and detained.
I need your assistance. There is a gentleman, Mr. Malcolm.
He humiliated me.
No. I then found out he had a list.
You have a list of qualifications for a bride?
I would love for Mr. Malcolm to receive the comeuppance he deserves.
Plus, it could be rather fun.
If we present you as the perfect woman, then he discovers he does not meet the requirements on your list. That would be a perfect sort of poetic justice.
Mr. Malcolm,
there's someone I want to introduce you to, Miss Selina Dalton.
I'm very pleased to make your acquaintance. Perhaps you might join me for a tour of the picture gallery.
Most certainly have a reputation.
Is that the famous Mr. Malcolm? Do you know him?
And you believe this description of me?
He was very impressed by her wit and humour.
I must be nearsighted.
May I assist?
Selina, it is working.
Why did you come to London, Miss Dalton?
Because I was lonely.
I was lonely too before you came.
Your list is a shield. You do not want to give your heart to a woman unworthy.
It gives us hope, and hope is a good thing.
Perhaps I am mistaken in thinking hope a useless thing.
You're being blinded by his intelligent conversation and devastatingly handsome good looks.
What?
You thought to humiliate Malcolm, and you end up presenting him with the perfect wife, and that must sting.
Wish me luck, old boy.
I don't think you'll meet it.
It is time to show Malcolm your list.
I do not think Mr. Malcolm is the man you think he is.
Seems you have been deceiving me from the beginning.
Love cannot be planned so carefully. It will stir things up a bit. That is part of its charm.
I saw it last night. I was absolutely delighted by it. So I am absolutely thrilled to welcome my co-host today, who also came to see it with me and at the end of the film was sobbing next to me, and it was a comedy. She's a romantic. She's such a romantic. She was in a comedy puddle. She is a very well-known actress. You will know her from BBC and Showtime's Ill Behaviour. You will also know her from Doctors and lots of brilliant theatre that she's done, including The Worst End. She will also know her, if you don't, you should get to know her from the Best Pick Movie podcast produced by The Spontaneity Shop. Please welcome the incredible Jessica Regan.
Hello. Woo. Hello.
And today we are lucky enough to have in our studio here at Spontaneity Shop headquarters at The Guilty Feminist, the wonderful director whose vision Mr. Malcolm's List was, from the short to the feature, the wonderful, the talented, the brilliant director, Emma Holly Jones.
Hey, woo! Welcome, yeah. And congratulations.
Emma, it is just so wonderful to have you here. I can't believe you've made a whole brilliant feature film with all of those beautiful costumes, beautiful, beautiful cinematography, beautiful, beautiful scenes. And the heart of it feels really feminist, but you've given me all the guilty trappings that I know and love. So thank you for making such a guilty feminist film.
I mean, I think that was definitely my direction. I was like, I love the movies of the 90s and I love the rom-coms, and you can watch a few of them back now and they're slightly problematic in places. So I think a big part of this for me was trying to recreate that tone and find that feeling for an audience today.
Well, that absolutely happened, because I echo that. Such a fan of films of the 90s. You know, me and my friends, we were teenagers, and it was kind of period films like Emma and Sense and Sensibility was where you went to see sophisticated storytelling that was, you know, that you were allowed in, because, you know, in Ireland, the rating systems, there was 18s and, you know, you couldn't get to like the adult films, but you were beyond, you know, children's films. And that hinterland was occupied by period, but it was very homogenous. And it was, you weren't exposed to any kind of diversity in casting, and it just became very normalized and you became used to that landscape. So that I was a soppy puddle by the end, but I think also the feeling that, like, my friend who I would watch these films with, her daughter is now of the age where she could go to Mr. Malcolm's List and she will see a very different cast than I did. And that's what really got me at the end. And that's why the fake eyelashes you lent me came right off.
Yeah, this is consciously cast. So could you talk us through what drew you to the script, the theme, the subject matter, and also what was your decision around conscious casting?
So I actually heard the script for the first time on the Blacklist podcast, which were they were doing table reads of scripts at the time. It's about 7 years ago. So it's actually an amazing way to find a piece of material because I was driving my car. So your mind sort of can really go wild. You know, you're not reading as much direction. You're really just listening to a bunch of actors sort of interpret these roles. And the same week I saw Hamilton and I called my now husband and I was like, Mr. Malcolm's List in the style of Hamilton. And he was like, I think you might be onto something there. Because this was 7 years ago. This was pre-Bridgerton, you know, it was just as Hamilton was, you know, at its peak smash in the beginning of its run.
We were watching the YouTube clips, like, you know, and going, what the hell is this?
And it was, honestly, I came out of Hamilton and I really had to think for a second about why an entire genre has looked the way it's looked. And then, it sounds so silly, but I just asked myself the most basic questions. When did I think, I'm sure this is the wrong word, but immigration started in the UK? And then I realized our visual sort of exposure to that question is through Hollywood films and TV shows. And it's not accurate.
No.
They are completely whitewashed. And all it takes is a couple minutes in Google and you can find paintings and poems and songs and art. And Jane Austen, Sandition, had a, you know, mixed race lead character, which they've actually, you know, portrayed correctly in the most recent TV show. So that was enough for me. I was like, there's so much there for the plucking. And, you know, I always asked everyone who came into the film, like, when do you think England started to look like the melting pot of cultures it is today? And I guess my answer will be when they started invented boats. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'm not a historian. But all I know is what Lin-Manuel Miranda did completely sparked a different sort of thinking for me. Mm. And that was enough. And it was that way or no way. And I also realized, as you said, like, you know, taking your friend's daughters, like, there's... I have no interest, whether it's a period film or a, you know, a present film, whatever I do, I have no interest in making a movie that doesn't look like the world that I live in and, you know, we all live in. And so that was enough. And I think the most wonderful thing about that is when I optioned the material and I hired this amazing Black female casting director called Tamara Lee Lockhart, who is an incredible friend. So she really held me accountable in this entire process. Like whenever, you know, I had an issue with a financer or trying to raise the money, she was like, no, you know, she really held me firm. Because sometimes you're so desperate to get a first film made that when someone tells you to make it X way or, you know, sometimes you can be tempted.
Yeah.
But she was absolutely incredible. And I think the most amazing thing for me was when I started to meet this cast. I mean, it's the thing that everyone talks about. They are absolutely incredible. And getting to meet them on, you know, some of them on the short film and some of them on the feature, you're allowing unbelievable British talent to stretch their legs in a genre they know, a genre they've consumed and never have an opportunity in. So they're sort of the characters and the shoes they're walking in are actually so fresh, so funny, and so alive. And the energy was phenomenal on set.
But yet there is this timeless grace that they bring to it as well. It does feel so fresh and modern, and yet it is all the trappings that we love. For me as well, the kind of the lineage, like to see his mother as well. So I'm talking about Chappé Dirisu, who's Mr. Malcolm, who's our titular hero, and to see the regality of his mother and just her hair, her beauty, her strength, her power. And you just want more of that now.
Yeah.
Whitewashed adaptations are going to seem so, they're not going to sustain, they're not going to hold. It will feel regressive, I think, for us to go back to any kind of homogeneity after Hamilton, after work like Mr. Malcolm's List.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that you planned this before Bridgerton came out, because presumably Shonda Rhimes had the same idea. And it's so great to see like minds at work changing the landscape. Mm-hmm. And you know, what we don't want this to be is a fad or a phase where we go, oh, we've done that now. And I think it won't be. I really do think we also had David Copperfield. You know, I think it's
hugely
Belle, Amarasante's Belle, like Bridgerton, us, Hamilton. We actually, none of us were the first. And as you say, like, hopefully none of us will be the last, you
know. But it feels like you're at the fresh beginning of an exciting new movement. And that's a wonderful thing. As a female director, I know it's very difficult to get stuff made. Do you feel there was extra energy because you had conscious casting, or would you have got more money or less money if you had not done conscious casting?
We would have got more money if I'd done it the way I think every period drama had looked. I think there's no doubt in my mind about that. You know, I'm no expert on foreign sales. But, you know, I think there is, it's spoken about all the time, you know, Hollywood is not great at diversifying how it spends its dollars and who it invests in. And, you know, I think it's a lot easier for people to put money into things they deem less risky. And sadly, there's a lot of people and a lot of companies that think newer, fresher, female, you know, talent, directors, writers, and then actors of color, you know, are more risky. And that is something I think everybody in this industry deep down knows is still a problem.
Well, we discovered while we did research for our podcast, Best Pick, that a film like Carmen Jones made more when it was released. You know, black film, black cast, made more when it was released than the Best Picture winner that year, which was On the Waterfront. These films have made tons of money. But the messaging is that it's harder to sell. That's never been true, actually. Cinema began with a black man on a horse, you know, like, I just think that is a myth that is sold. I think there's other myths out there as well that can be digested, that, oh, well, everything's diverse now, and if you're a white actor, you can't get work. That's absolutely wrongheaded and insane and rhetoric that we really have to push against, because it's just not true.
Yeah, the industry is missing out on a profit margin by not investing in talent that looks like the audience. So that is that simple. Actually, the Franklin Leonard, my husband, did a incredible study with McKinsey on literally about the dollars that are lost because of the lack of investment in diversity across the board.
It's huge, isn't it? I read that study.
It's amazing.
Phenomenal. It was so fascinating. It's insane because those films do brilliantly at the box office. They win Oscars.
And also, female audience, just stories written by and directed by and created by and about women. Like, you know.
About women, for women, and by women.
Mm-hmm.
And the by women part of that is the most important thing, because I think often they'll like get a female rom-com sort of Nora Ephron writer and then everything else will be done by men. And it's sort of fleeced somehow. Yeah. It sort of feels almost like we're giving you ladies what you want. And it's like whenever it's done fully driven by women, not necessarily exclusive.
Mayors, hundreds of millions.
You feel a different kinship with it when a woman is really driving it, or women, more accurately, are really driving it.
And also inspiring young people. I think, you know, I have, talking about what it is to become a female director, like when I was at school and I said I was interested in the film industry, I was told, oh, you want to be an actor? And I was like, no, don't think so. And they were like, oh, you should do stage management. And I was like, no, don't think so. So that, you know, I think now there is more female-driven content. It's more inspiring. I remember actually, I had a really clear moment when I watched the pilot of Girls, of Lena Dunham's Girls, and I remember thinking, I have never seen a character like this on TV. And what I was seeing was something that reminded me of myself. I remember that pilot just being like totally moved, because I had never seen a flawed young girl on television having, I think it was, you know, a bad hookup in the first episode that was also very funny and very awkward. And I was like, But that's what it is like.
And she's the pursuer, not the pursued.
Yeah, and I remember feeling like totally moved by that. And I think, you know, I also when I saw the female Ghostbusters, I just was like, I was totally moved by that as well, because I was like, I've never seen an action movie that's just all women, and it was totally moving.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah, and we are at the Edinburgh Festival. On the 25th of August, my co-host is Celia AB. My guests are Cordelia Stevenson, Jake Wakely, Josie Underwood, with music act Jess Robinson. On the 26th of August, my co-host is Jessica Foster Q. Our guest is Sakisa, and our music act is Grace Petrie. On the 27th of August, my co-host is Sindhu V. My guest is Rosie Holt, and the music act is Flo and Joan. On the 28th of August, my co-host is Alison Spittle. My guest is Jambi McGrath, and the music act is Grace Petrie. Get your tickets now for The Guilty Feminist at the Edinburgh Fringe before they all sell out. We're at the Gilded Balloon TV at every day at 2 p.m. from the 25th to the 28th of August. And now back to the podcast. How do you go from being not a director to a director? Because how do people trust you with that much money, or how do you convince people to trust you with that much money?
Well, the short film was a big part of that. So when, after I found the script on the podcast, you know, that was, as I say, that was 7 years ago, I found some producers, Laura Rister and Laura Lewis, to sort of come on board and try and get this made with me. And I think as a first-time feature director, obviously I was directing, you know, short films and commercial and documentary stuff before that, but to take that leap and that jump, especially when you're out there pitching a period drama in theory as a genre, you know, a lot of people are like, not sure about that for a first-timer. And like Netflix categorically told us we don't finance period for first-time filmmakers. So I knew that I very much had to make a proof of concept, and that's where the short film was born from. And we were very, very lucky that Refinery 29 had a short film fund for female directors. And they were incredible, because you cannot make the short film we made, which, by the way, still watch on YouTube, on Refinery 29's YouTube. You cannot make that scale of short film for, you know, 10, 20 grand. And Refinery 29 gave us a good chunk of change to go make this short film in England, with all the bells and whistles. So it really was a proof of concept. I couldn't have, you know, grabbed a horse in Griffith Park and grabbed an actor and tried to turn LA, where I live, into, you know, Regency England. So
not the weather, my friend.
No, it was, you know, sunny all the year round over there.
Like a Western.
It would have been like a Western. Western. That's Malcolm's what happens.
Western. Malcolm's Western. Yeah.
Definitely not me. I'm still too British for the Western genre, I think. But
when we finished the show, I was very adamant that I didn't want to do short film festivals. Like, and I'm sure a number of people won't agree with me when I say this, but I felt as a filmmaker, I needed to prove that there was an audience for this. And I thought, I can put it in a short film festival and a bunch of really nice people will see it in a small room and then nobody else will ever see it. So I put it on YouTube, on Refinery29's YouTube. And I wasn't expecting it to blow up like it did, but it really did. And it got millions and millions of views and comments. And that was amazing because I could literally walk into pitches and be like, oh, and here's 20,000 comments from girls all over the world saying they want to see what happens next.
Oh, and that's so smart.
This was called Mr. Malcolm's...
List the Overture.
Mr. Malcolm's List the Overture.
Yeah, but if you just put Mr. Malcolm's short film, it comes up. And it was obviously Frida and Chope... were Malcolm and Selena in that, and Oliver Jackson Cohen was Lord Cassidy. So tomorrow, that's when Tamara Notcutt, the casting director, got involved, and a lot of the crew from the short came all the way through the feature
all the
with
way.
Us.
All that's, the so, that must be a testament to you, though, as well, yeah. that you were able to, like, you know, so much of being a director is marshalling the troops and being a unifier. Yeah. And a go-between of departments. Yeah. So that must be a real testament to how you work.
Yeah, and I think short film was, you know, it was a really good way for me to throw some stuff at a wall and see what sticks. I mean, obviously we spoke about casting the film the way I cast it, but also I realized in that short film that it wasn't as simple as just giving these roles to these incredible actors. I had to really think about how I designed the film. And one of the things I'm most proud of with Malcolm's List is you don't think about the cast when you watch the movie. No. You think about the characters and you go on their journey. And that's a huge testament to all the department heads who worked on this film and the cast, because we all work collectively together to make sure that every set, every costume, every hairstyle was considered and created for the actor playing the role, just as you would in any other movie or any other genre. So you spoke about the hair, which is one of my favorite details in the movie, yeah. because Donna Kroll, who is legendary in
she's amazing.
She has locks. And, you know, me and Eileen Buggy, this incredible hair designer in Ireland, so we shot the movie in Ireland, we were like, what are we going to do with, you know, Lady Kilbourne's hair, which is just part of the process. And I didn't want to just shove a wig on her. I was like, I couldn't do it. And I was like, can we turn her locks into a period hairstyle? Because I actually think that's what our Lady Kilbourne would do. Mm-hmm. And Eileen just jumped at the idea. And when she came out of hair test, a trailer, and I saw that, I felt that we were onto something. Mm. I was like, it was that hairstyle that made me go, holy shit, this is going to work.
Yeah, I really noticed it because I thought, what a woman of that period would do, that it was this matronly high hairstyle that we're used to seeing from that period. But the actress has locks and
it's her black hair.
This character has locks turned into that same period hairstyle, which of course women must have done.
Yeah, and also Chope's afro. Do you know how many conversations me and Chope and, you know, Eileen had about like the length of the afro, you know? And I actually really left it up to Chope, you know? I was like, he needs to feel this, Malcolm. He, you know, and obviously, I don't want to give too much away, but Chope wrote some lines in Yoruba and injected them into script. And it was all about, for me, these actors working with any department they felt they needed to work with to feel these characters and make them their own. And another really cute one, which I love telling a story of because so many people won't notice it. And the point is, you're not meant to notice it. It's just meant to exist and it's meant to build a world. And the world that has these people in just makes sense. And that was my job, to curate all those people connecting and working together to create that visually. But obviously, one of the big things for Frida Pinto was costume. So her and Pam Down spent a lot of time. Also, by the way, in 1818 England, we were getting most of our prints and fabrics from India. So, you know, we would actually do a lot of historic research to the cultures at the time. So all Frida's costumes, we were like subtly embedding like paisley prints and Indian color tones and Indian fabrics. And then very, very cutely, Pam and Frida and Chope came up with this idea that as the movie goes on, Chope's waistcoats turned paisley in tribute to Frida's Indian culture.
Nice.
And it was like, it's really cute. And you'd never notice, but everything from like the tea in Dalton Cottage is Rubio's tea. It's not an English Earl Grey, you know, like every detail was considered by the team of people who worked on this movie.
That's the difference between doing the damn thing and not just paying lip service.
None of us wanted it to be gimmicky. We all, and I said to everybody who came onto this movie, I'm no expert. The actors really are experts in who they are. And we're going to figure this out together, but it's going to be a very prep-heavy movie. And if you're not down for that, this isn't the job for you. Mm. And luckily, I found the most incredible crew who really embraced it.
What were the hardest parts about making this movie that you can speak about in public? Because I know there'll be things you can't speak about.
Yeah. I think, look, I'm here as a first-time features director and I got my film made. And as you said, I'm not going to sit here and say it's so hard or it's this or that, because I actually did it. And I think, you know, that it just proves that there is a way and there are people out there who are willing to say yes. I think COVID of it was damn hard.
At what point were you in COVID when you made this?
March 2021. So pre-vaccine, level 5 lockdown in Ireland, which was gnarly. So I directed my entire first film with just my eyes, which is actually something I didn't really get to think about until I was really on it. Because when you're working with actors and they can't see how you're responding in your face, you know, that can sometimes be tough, you know. And by the way, anything, especially a comedy, when you're hoping people are laughing or you're hoping things are funny and none of the crew you can see. But it was wonderful because every now and again, because we were all wearing masks, it was almost like we were holding it all in, that sometimes just the entire crew would just break at Zowie and Ollie and Divian. Like, and those were really joyful moments. But no, the COVID of it was really hard because the cost of COVID really we had to take out of our budget. So I had to cut, like, I think it was like 400,000 euros or something in the 2 weeks before we started shooting to pay for COVID safety.
Wow.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's an enormous number of fans and ballrooms.
And how
you lose.
It's a lot of background artists we lost, actually. That was the big sacrifice. Yeah.
And I never noticed.
So actually
a
lot of fans.
I didn't think it looked sparse at all.
You made it work.
I've got to ask, how did you get on in Ireland?
I loved it.
How did you get on with the Irish crew?
Oh, they're amazing. I'm such fans of them all, and they're all so incredible. I think, you know, we had a lot of quarantines to deal with, so we really hired locally in a lot of areas, and we were just so lucky. They're incredible. They deserve to have a really rich, full industry because the talent out there is huge. And also, the locations that we got access to were absolutely incredible. And I hope if you see the movie, it really is beautiful. And a big part of that is the Irish architecture and the landscapes and everything. But they were all absolutely incredible. I'm gutted. I spent 4 months in Dublin. I absolutely loved it. And I didn't go to a single pub.
Emma, we're going to have to remedy that. That's next
shut.
Chance we get.
They were all shut.
Can you imagine?
My rap party
history that
was in
Dublin.
Hey,
was shut.
We close on Good Friday every year.
Whether we need to or
you're
not.
You're not, indeed.
My AD team on rap day took me for a pint in a car park, sitting in in the boots of our cars.
Show so, business.
Yeah, it was. So I'm desperate to go back and actually have a holiday and go eat and drink my way around Dublin.
I'll send you a list.
Well, I think you've turned out a remarkable film with a really happy cast. Last night, it was really lovely when Chopé came up on stage. He picked you up and span you around.
He keeps doing that. He did it on set all the time as well.
I'm a feminist, but I'm a real sucker for that. And I'm so sorry to say that, but...
I'm a feminist for sure. I could do that to me any time, honestly.
But when he did that, I thought, oh, this was a really happy set. Because I've been to many screenings where the actors come up and the gritted teeth, the smile. And yes, it was a wonderful experience all throughout. But you know full well that it wasn't, because you know someone in the cast and oh, it was quite difficult. And I think the fact that the actors were so happy on this set, and like Zowie said to me, anything I can do to support this film and to support Emma, I had such a wonderful time.
She's remarkable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just adored her performance. I mean, I thought everyone was excellent, but
she's so funny.
At one point I was looking at her clavicles going, how are your clavicles acting? How are you doing
she's
that?
She's a comedic genius.
Yeah.
Like, it was hard because she'd be like, any notes? I'd be like, nope. And I think that's a big part of being a director sometimes is, like, as I was saying to you before we started this chat, was a big part of directing, I think, sometimes is allowing the space and freedom for people to really be their best and bring their shit to the table. Mm. And if you create, my whole goal was to create an environment where people could up me in better ideas. And then, but hopefully have an environment that when I did have to say no, there was total respect for that. And that was my goal as the director, to really allow myself to say yes as much as humanly possible. And when I had to say no, for people to be really okay with it.
That's an actor's director.
Because you say yes so much.
That's an actor's director. Yeah. That's someone who really wants to get the best out of you, but also knows that you have that outside eye and for your own good and to still get the best of you, I'll say no here and I'll say yes there. And that's very cool
to
hear. I
think reasonable people really respond to a no if they've just had three yeses, or that's interesting, let me think about that, or you know. And it's not just no. Someone was telling me the other day about being on a set with a director who was just constantly killing the energy and making people feel low and then complaining they didn't look bonded. And it's like, well, they're not going to look bonded on screen if you're tearing them down. I love this atmosphere that you're talking about.
And also it's my job to figure out how they work best. So figuring out whose coverage should go first into close-ups, yes. Who needs a little bit more time here, and not making a big deal about it, who really needs to, you know, get some energy out. Like just creating a schedule with your AD team, which is something the actors are not even aware of, that really works for them so they can come to set and feel the things they need to feel. And I think that's one of the biggest things I learned, was just how much actors really do need to believe everything they're saying and feeling and doing. I knew that in theory, but I never quite got it till I saw this level of talent walking in those shoes.
You want to feel like a collaborator, and you have to earn that to an extent, but you don't want to be treated as like a mere puppet who's totally replaceable. You know, like, and I always think as well, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel at times the culture is to keep the cast and crew very separate and you stay in your lane. And I feel like the more bleed you have between departments, the better the thing. Like, you know, because an actor can save you a shot if they can, you know, throw it over their shoulder, if they feel like they can offer that up. All these things, we can all help each other out, make it work, be collaborative.
Yeah, and by the way, when you're shooting a movie for $6.8 million in 27 days, sometimes you need to say, and I had to do this to Ollie once, and he was really, and I remember, you know, the scene where Frida comes to London for the first time, and Ollie doesn't say much in this scene, but he's absolutely hysterical in this scene. It was a big old scene. There was like a lot of dialogues. It took all day. And I, you know, had a lot of angles. I was in, you know, full 360 in the room. So I was really trying to move this camera around fast. And when I got to Oliver, I was like, I'm going to need you to do everything you can do in this one take, because that's all I've got time-wise. And, you know, he was really game. So it is just important sometimes for when you are in a sticky situation to be able to count on your actors to get you through as well. So
that's trusting them, isn't it? And understand and giving them, throwing an actor that ball of that challenge. Yeah. How wonderful to be told,
give
okay,
it to me.
Jess, you've got one take. We want everything from you. It's lovely.
Like, exactly. Every reaction face you can possibly give me, Oliver. Yeah. And he was incredible. But
he's wonderful, actually.
I have to go back to Zowie, because Zowie is obviously an incredibly talented writer. Mm-hmm. And an incredibly talented director. And she came in very last minute to this film. And she saved this film, one. We had an actress drop out 2 weeks. You talk about what was hard.
2 weeks before?
2 weeks before we started shooting.
Lord. Oh, my God.
It was Constance Wu, which I'm comfortable to say, because I knew it, you know, it was obviously announced that she was in the movie, and the movie was financed with her. But, you know, she did drop out 2 weeks before. So we were actually very panicked that the movie wasn't going to survive. And we were all in Ireland and all in prep. And
I feel sick. I'm sorry.
I mean, these things happened
for a reason.
But also at the highest level, you know, you hear these stories in Hollywood. You hear these stories in, you know, a friend of mine who's an A-list film star had it, you know, with something she was producing. You know, it just
happens.
People drop out all the time.
Unfortunately, it was, you know, the reasons were her reasons. And I've always said, you've got to be in on a low budget movie 120% or actually do us the favor of dropping out, because otherwise the film suffers. I think what was scary in that moment was we didn't know if the finance was going to drop out, right? So
it takes so much prep and so much time.
Yeah, you're
so
well in. Fame. When we say 2 weeks before it starts shooting, that means you're so far into prep. Like this,
so that
this
means every costume had to be remade. And you can remember that actresses' heights were extraordinarily different. But the silver lining of this very stressful period was, I think, that the right person for the role came in. And not only that, she pushed me harder than any person's ever pushed me creatively, because she came in, she was like, I need to make what's on this page mine now. And she pitched me the Bridget Jones of Julia Thistlewaite in 1818. And I was obsessed with the way she had taken, you know, this script. And we were up late nights in prep and during shooting, rewriting things and developing ideas. And we had a lot of rehearsals for, you know, with everyone. So the chemistries were all, and obviously really built very quickly between a lot of them, but very, very genuine. Like her and Oliver Jackson Cohen's chemistry on screen is exactly the same in real life. I think they're like long lost brothers and sisters, really, those two from a different lifetime.
That was a lovely relationship as well. Yeah. You know, to see that kind of, like, that almost like brother sister, that those teasing cousins kind of connection.
And it's really charming.
Zowie is extraordinary. And she's extraordinary in this movie, and she made it better. And, you know, she deserves every accolade she's getting for this film.
Well, so. I hope there are BAFTAs a go-go. We've got to wrap up. But can I ask, Emma, is there anything you came to say you didn't get to say?
I think what I want to say is to people who are thinking about you know, going to see this movie, is I've been describing it as a warm cup of tea, and it really is comforting. It really is feel good. And it really is, I hope, a rom-com for 2022 set in 1818.
I think this shows also brilliant, flawed women who know how to manipulate, the power of female friendship, the ability for women to be rivals, unexpected rivals. There's a lot of feminist stuff in here as well, in terms of allowing women to be flawed, analysing women who are able to run rings around men. And it is the women's story.
And also, you can be imperfect and redeem yourself and have forgiveness and redemption and come to an understanding.
Match, by the way, as we learn in the movie. So, you know, it's true.
It's not just bad guys, but what's interesting is watching someone be the kind of bad guy you can sometimes be.
Yeah.
If you let your worst imaginings run away and you actually did to them. I think we've all probably had those imaginings.
Of course.
Most of them don't. And we go to the theater or we go to the cinema for catharsis to see somebody actually follow through and not just think, I don't know what I'd do.
Yeah.
See someone do it. But also, you're not a bad person. You're just a person who acted on a bad thought.
And she gets her happy ending. You know, they all do.
Spoiler,
sorry. Well, I mean, like,
it's a feel-good film.
Everyone. I'm like, they're like, some people have been like, it's predictable. I'm like, no shit, Sherlock. Like, I think we know what's going to happen when you look at the poster. Yeah. But the trick is to take you on the journey. And all those things you just so graciously mentioned and we all worked so hard on doing. It's not just a love story. It's just a love story between women. Mm, and it's
very
a story, you know, I broke all the rules of historical accuracy with these girls. I was like, they can go where they want unchaperoned. They can go to horse auctions. They can play croquet with the boys because, frankly,
they can shoot.
I can. You know, they can shoot guns. They can be part of this genre in the way that women should have been. And it was so much fun to do those things.
But also, there always were women that did those things that broke the rules. And they were just seen as rule breakers. But yeah. You know, of course there were women who went and did those things. But it wasn't the thing to do. And so let's watch some women who did those things rather than women who did the thing to do.
Or who just took turns around the room. You got a food for those early Pride and Prejudice.
We don't go on.
You did. There was a turn around the room, which I thought.
Turn around the room. I sometimes have to take a turn around the room. I'm not going to lie.
I really empathize with that part.
It's a wonderful thing to do in life. Excuse me, please, may I take a turn around the room?
I think we should take more turns around the room.
Because I don't need to see my eyes right now. Exactly. Yeah, I'm about to kick off.
It was absolutely brilliant. Please, everybody, go out, support a female directed, written, and driven film. And also, you get to see the wonderful Zowie Ashton for no extra money. Please try and see it at the cinema if you can. If you can't, where will they be able to see it?
I believe it will be coming on demand at the end of the year.
So, yeah, Get Out, Mr. Malcolm's List is your new favourite film. Thank you so much, Jessica Regan.
My pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thank you for making this film.
Thank you for having me.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. It's Jessica Regan here from Big Speeches. Well, as the price of everything is going up, we have decided to lower our prices to make this training as accessible as possible. I teach the Big Speeches workshop for Guilty Feminist online on Sundays. Our upcoming dates are August 28th, Sunday, and September 25th, also Sunday. Both workshops take place at 3:30 p.m., and they'll run for 3 to 4 hours, depending on the number of attendees. We've lowered our full price tickets and our subsidised tickets, so do book as fast as you can, as they won't be around for long. Really looking forward to seeing you. Thank you for bearing with us. We're very happy to be back. Please go to guiltyfeminist.com/bigspeeches to book your place now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.